This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Craig Hoffman's got Dan Orlovsky on the show, 6 p.m. tonight on Craig's show. Craig's also going to be in Detroit, and we will certainly effort to get Craig live from Detroit, where the draft is being held on Thursday. We'll get him on the show sometime on Thursday. Joining us right now, and perhaps more this week, even though I haven't talked to him about it yet, than his typical appearance number, which is Mondays and Fridays, is Ben Standig. 12 noon Mondays, 12 noon Friday, maybe on draft day, we'll see. Ben is a three-time NFL mock draft champion. That is not an exaggeration. I forget the name of the contest that you have entered and won three times. So maybe you can make everybody familiar with that. What's the name of it again? Sorry.
It's the Huddle Report.
The Huddle Report, exactly. They track, they have a contest every year, a lot of big-time, big-name mock drafters, and Ben's won it three times. Three. So you should be listening to him all year round, but especially this week. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, at Ben Standig on Twitter. Read him at The Athletic. He's got a podcast called Standig Room Only, and he's got his seven-round Commanders mock draft out, which we will get to some of that coming up here in a moment. But I have not talked to you since mid-last week because I was off for a few days and out of town. So tell me just kind of where you are on the, you know, the noise last week around Jaden Daniels and the agent liking some tweets that were critical of Washington's handling of the top 30 visits, you know, and then some of the stuff that came out afterwards from the PR agency essentially telling the agent to stand down. Just, you know, I'll ask it this way. Important or not important for the team, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's potentially important. You know, the whole idea that they even did this, like Adam Peters with San Francisco, and he saw Bill Belichick do this in New England, have historically brought in a group of prospects together for these outings rather than doing sort of the more formal. You know, one guy comes in, has a solo meeting with everybody, et cetera. Whether this is the best way to do this, I don't know. Certainly people like Mike Florio have questioned it. My counter would be, tell me the one that works and we can do that, because it seems like everybody admits that nobody knows how to evaluate these quarterbacks every single year. So I don't know why one theory should be discounted more
right
than another, but okay.
Yeah.
Here's my actual theory, Kevin. Here's my theory. I think that it's been out there that Jaden Daniels is the guy, meaning when I say out there, nothing from the team, but just people like me for the last, you know, 2 months have been having Jaden Daniels as my pick. Obviously, Schefter's talked a lot about this in recent days, and now more and more of the mock draft types are putting Daniels there. So there's some sense of him being the front runner. It seems to me, from what I gather, that he and his camp were probably caught off guard that they were coming into this group outing, that it wasn't just him, because obviously typically that is how this works. And I think as the presumed front runner, that could be wrong. It could be Drake May or McCarthy. I'm not ruling out either of them. But, you know, from his side of the world, I think the assumption was that he was coming in solo. Maybe that's poor communication on Washington, or maybe that's exactly what they wanted to do. So when you're therefore coming from the Daniel side, it's like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, part of the agent's job isn't just to advocate for your client. It's to prepare them for everything that's coming up along the way. And if they didn't prepare him for a group outing, which in fairness to them would be something would be, you know, you wouldn't necessarily imagine, it makes you caught off guard. And maybe the agent is, you know, who is not with one of the big firms. He's, I don't know his whole client list. I know he has Derek Forrest, among others. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe he was like, whoa, what's going on here? I got to keep, you know, I got to keep going here with this big client I now have. And I don't want to give him any reason to question anything. So it seems odd that this is happening. And maybe some of the reaction, including the thinking emoji that he posted the other day on top of a Florio story, I believe, regarding with Florio questioning this, was some reaction to that. Now, does any of this have anything to do with whether Washington would or would not take him at two? I highly doubt it. If they want Jaden Daniels at two, the emoji is not going to upset that. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, unless they did this whole bit, meaning the team, to gauge how people would react, right? I mean, it's funny, nobody is saying anything about Drake May. What, you know, shouldn't Drake May be hypothetically offended, if that's the way to look at it, which I'm not saying Jaden Daniels was offended. I don't, you know, he's not said that. I saw him, he was on with Shannon Sharpe and Chad Ocho Cinco last
night.
Yeah,
we played it.
He didn't say a ton, but he didn't say that. So they talk about, like, you know, having McLaurin and Dotson here and how cool that would be and things like that. So I think, to me, like, that's like, I'm looking at it from more of the almost the human element rather than the strategic element. If they want Jaden Daniels, I suspect they will still take him. He remains the guy that I'm projecting, but I am not ruling out May or McCarthy, because, again, we just went through this with the coaching search and how it was presumed to be Ben Johnson based on very little actual information. And the same thing is still the case here. So, you know, it's nothing would surprise me at this point based on what we just went through with the coaching, but I'm staying with Daniels and I'm not putting a huge amount of stock into what just happened last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons you don't put a lot of stock into what happened last week is that none of this came from Daniels himself. It's possible that the agent was speaking on behalf of Daniels and the two of them huddled up and they were pissed off with the way it was conducted. Or in your description, they were caught off guard and uncomfortable with it. It's just, but we haven't heard that from him. And it wouldn't be unusual for a young person that's going to go into a draft to have a preference, but it's just not the way it works at the NFL level or at the NBA level. You go where you're drafted. You'll have an opportunity at some point, maybe, to pick where you work and live, but that's not the way it works because of competitive balance that drives millions and millions of revenue, which they get a piece of, you know, 49.6% of or whatever it is. And it's the way it works. I think what would be interesting is if they had Jaden Daniels as their clear-cut number one, and they perform this exercise to kind of identify leadership capability or insecurities that some may have or whatever it is they're trying to identify by having everybody together. And they were off-put a little bit by the way Daniels' agent reacted to it. So now what do you do? If you've got him rated football-wise ahead of the others, but intangible-wise maybe a little bit behind, you know, then you'd love to see it all come together in one guy and have a clear-cut number one. But like you said, I'm not sure anybody really knows. But I do think they know now. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I think that they have to have, at least as individuals, have to have a feel for who they would want. Now, Adam Peters is ultimately going to make this call. If Josh Harris wants to weigh in to a degree because it's a quarterback, well, obviously that's his right to do so. But ultimately, you know, Peters is going to take the information that he has. He is known for being inclusive and wanting to, you know, when he was in San Francisco, you know, wanting to get everybody on the same page rather than, you know, speaking from high up saying we're doing this, you know, bugger off, you know. So I imagine he's going to try to get this to a consensus in that room. I think that, again, what, you know, he probably knows what he wants to do. He probably did before last week happened, but, you know, that's why you do this. You know, he made a point the other day in his press conference, you know, you don't have to make a decision until you have to make a decision. That is very true. There, I mean, like, as somebody who is a massive procrastinator, that's how I live my life. But in this case, yeah, I mean, even today's Monday, the draft is Thursday. You would like to think that they have some conviction with what they're doing, and they're not just literally sitting there at the last second like a fantasy football owner who can't find the page for quarterbacks and doesn't know who to pick and then just blurt something out. But at the same time, you know, he told us the other day they're still going to have conversations about the 30 visits and what it all meant. They talked to about the medical stuff at the end of last week. And, you know, this is what they do. This is how this process works. You take it to the end, you figure out what your goal is and who you want and move forward. So, you know, I don't think anything is that crazy. It's just that when you're picking second and it's quarterbacks involved and they're not saying anything, it is a perfect mix to have weird speculation. And again, we just went through this with the coaching search, and that's why I'm not really at anything, because we just, again, literally just went through this.
What's actually been officially, when I say officially, I'll take it from, you know, your standpoint as a true reporter versus what I do, which is just yak on radio and podcasts every week. As a reporter, as a professional reporter, what do you think, if anything, has actually been reported about Washington and number two, or Washington and Daniels, or Washington and May, or Washington and any others? Has it all been, you know, strong hunch or speculation? Has there been any reporting?
Adam Peters told us they intend to make the pick at two, and there's been no mention of any other position other than quarterback, right? So that to me would be the reporting. I think most everything else isn't that. I mean, look, there are things that I could tell you that, so if somebody told me this and I heard that, and when I put them together, that combined with these other three things, that paints a picture for me that suggests X, but that's not reporting. I mean, that's theorizing. And like I would say, and I'm not to try to pick on him or anything, but, like, you know, Adam Schefter now has kind of weighed into this over the last few weeks. And he has repeatedly said on my podcast and elsewhere, look, I'm reading the tea leaves. I'm seeing what I see, and not based on anything I'm hearing from the team, but what I see and what I hear leads me to Jaden Daniels. And he stayed with that. And that is sort of my point. If that guy can't attach sources said to anything he's reporting, including today what he wrote, where he had a bunch of nuggets about the draft on ESPN, then that's not there, right? I mean, you know, this is all, like, you know, unfortunately, this part of the reporting leads, you know, bleeds into, like, entertainment, right? I mean, Adam Schefter isn't just going on television every day or writing or tweeting for the sake of it. He has a job. He has to put information out. But when you don't have concrete information, how do you put something out there to make it sound like you have something more than maybe you even do? I'm probably too honest when I constantly come here and tell you that they're not talking, because it makes it sound like I'm not hitting the right people up. But again, nobody is. Everybody is saying the same exact thing. So I don't think there's been much reporting on this to that extent at all to make me or anybody else say it is Jaden Daniels. But when I look at the whole information and look, even the play, the play style and the abilities of the quarterback, I can make cases for all three of them to certain degrees. But like I said, when I just take it all in totality, look at everything I've heard, trying to read the room, other information, and not to mention just, you know, I did that poll a couple weeks ago where I asked a bunch of sources to give me your view of these quarterbacks, and Jaden Daniels came in second. Some people even thought he was better than Caleb Williams. Over the weekend, I, you know, checked in with other people. Hey, tell me what you guys are thinking. And I had two teams basically tell me they would have Jaden Daniels second themselves. So that's the other thing. It just feels like there's just more people saying Daniels that they would do than May. But it doesn't mean that's what Peters thinks, but all of it together is how I get to Daniels. And I don't think there's been a ton of reporting on this.
Yeah, I think what you said right there is perhaps the most important thing, and that is, you know, when you say, or, you know, Schefter, as he said today, the signs continue to point to Washington taking him at number two. A lot of that is based on so many people that you believe and Schefter believes and people who are reporters find credible. I mean, you had an unbelievable survey of NFL people who have done this for a living, coaches, scouts, GMs, former GMs, etc., former quarterbacks, NFL quarterbacks that are talking heads now. And then, you know, like today, Schefter's got a coach saying that, you know, Daniels is the number one quarterback in this draft. It's a no-brainer to me. I'd take him over Caleb Williams. He's the best guy in this draft. Somebody else saying, you know, you're getting Lamar 2.0, but further along as a passer when he came out. And so when you, again, and I said this last week, I'm not talking about guys that are doing this from, you know, without the experience to do it, and they, you know, have a few followers and they write well and they speak well, but, you know, there's no real experience in doing this. I'm talking about most of the people that most of us would find credible. It looks like he's clearly the number two quarterback in the draft. And that's the biggest tell. Is that if you then think that Adam Peters is a general manager and the people around him, including the coaching staff, are in that same realm of credibility, then you just say, well, why wouldn't they come to the same conclusion?
Yeah, and that's pretty much where I've been kind of at sort of from the beginning of all of this. You know, I remember when on my podcast, I had Randy Mueller, a two-time former NFL GM who now works for The Athletic, on my podcast. And I think we were mainly talking about free agency, but obviously I had to ask a question about the draft. And he was the first person that said to me, he's not confident that Drake May would even be in his top three and maybe even further down the list because he thinks he needs a lot of work. And I was like, whoa, Randy, what's going on over there? You know, how you doing? You okay? Is this a sign for help? What's happening? Cause I'd heard nothing like that. And then since then there's been, a lot of others who've weighed in saying Drake May is definitely much more of a work in progress, probably needs to sit a year. And, you know, again, that, you know, nobody's taking him off their board. Most people would still have him in their top, you know, handful of prospects in the draft, et cetera. But yeah, this has been going on for a while. And again, it's not that people are saying nothing critical about Daniels. It's just the variance between what the good and bad for Daniels is pretty tight. Whereas for May, it's pretty wide. McCarthy is sort of a slightly different deal. He doesn't have the upside perceived as the other two, but he might have a higher floor than either of those guys based on how he performed at Michigan. So, yeah, I mean, it really makes for an interesting deal. And at the end of the day, you have to guess, what is Adam Peters thinking? And like you just said, is it likely that he is within the same general framework of thinking as most people in the league that I've talked to? I mean, it just seems like you would say that, right? So, yes, that's kind of where I've come down on this as well.
Talking to Ben Standig. So Ben has up on The Athletic today Washington's 7-round NFL mock draft. He does have Jaden Daniels, which he's had through all of his mock drafts, being selected number two by Washington. And then you did something different in this particular mock draft, and I'm interested to hear why you, instead of trading up into the first round with all of that draft capital that they have day two and three, you actually took 36, their first of the 2 second-round picks, and traded back. So tell everybody the trade you made and then why you made that trade.
Yeah, the trade itself, which is, you know, just me guessing, not based on, like, I heard this, but, like, Atlanta and Washington make a trade. Atlanta clearly is in, like, a win-now mode, the Kirk Cousins signing, you know, the owner, the 80-something-year-old owner pretty much saying, let's get going already. So I had them trading up for, you know, they want some more established player or whatever. From Washington's perspective, so, I mean, I have been all along, going back to free agency before anything even happened, been saying that I see them focusing more on 2025 than I do 2024. Their moves in free agency, I think, showed that. You know, other than a couple of players, you know, Tyler Biadasz, Frankie Louvu, Dorrance Armstrong, they pretty much signed everybody else to like a one-year deal.
Right.
Because it was just about, they got to have a functional roster, and they have to try to change, you know, the mindset, the culture around here. So, you know, they have brought in a lot of Cowboys players and all that. But it's not a roster that I'm saying is still going to win big. I mean, if the quarterback they pick is C.J. Stroud, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But, like, in theory, they're not playing for this year. So, okay, everybody says they got to get a left tackle. We agree. But you look at the board, right? The two left tackles that are in the top group, but typically the last two available, are Amarius Mims from Georgia and Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, two huge guys. Okay, Guyton primarily played at right tackle, but some people think he can play left. But here's the thing. Mims only started 8 games at Georgia, and Guyton started 15. Guyton in particular, when I looked at the analysis from our guy Dane Brugler, from Daniel Jeremiah, Eric Edholm, who I know you've had on the show from NFL.com.
NFL Network.
They all mentioned some version of Guyton's a work in progress. He's raw. He probably needs time. So I'm thinking, wait a minute. If the assumption that we're all making is they're going to trade up for a left tackle to protect Jaden Daniels or Drake May or whatever now, why are we sure that's actually going to be the case? If all these guys are very inexperienced, is that the plan to put the inexperienced tackle out there now to protect Daniels? Or is it more long-term, you have to get the left tackle, which I would agree. Obviously, they have to do that. So I'm thinking they go the other way. Trade down, you still take a tackle in round 2. It's not multiple tackles or multiple offensive linemen in the draft. But then you get ahead of next year, because next year is when I think Adam Peters – gets a little more aggressive, especially if things go right this year in terms of quarterback development and just everything else they've done here with this roster. So I think it's, for me, if these tackles are as inexperienced as people say and the team agrees, I ultimately, it's like, why trade up now? Just wait, build up your roster. You still have to get some sort of tackle help and then go forward rather than spending extra picks to trade up when you don't, you know, all these picks matter a ton for this team, whether they keep all 9 or not. So that's ultimately how I decided to land on that. Now, look, if Amarius Mims is there, like, say, 21, and I think the Dolphins are a team that could trade down because they need picks, all right, well, then if you think he's all that, go ahead, make the move. But like I said, if you think he's going to have to sit half the year or longer because he's not ready, then I think you go the other way and try to get, you know, future assets more than the notion of immediate help.
Okay, so real quickly, what did they end up picking up, just tell everybody, by trading with Atlanta from 36 back? I'm sorry?
Yeah, sure. I get that. I don't have that exactly in front of me, but basically they swapped second-round picks with Atlanta, so Atlanta's at 43. So a 7-pick slide, nothing too crazy. You still have 40 of their own pick. And then they would swap pick 152 for 109 and then pick up a second-round pick next year from Atlanta. So
got it.
For this year, you keep the same picks. You move slightly down in the second, and you move significantly up in the middle rounds. But that second-round pick next year is the key. In terms of why I see this as a good trade for them.
All right, so I like your I like your logic with respect to, you know, the tackles not being ready to play, so perhaps that's, you know, not the position that they would be looking to trade up for. But what about considering another position like edge pass rusher, like Chop Robinson? You know, we got Cliff Kingsbury as quarterback, and now, Dan, we're getting you your pass rusher.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, Chop Robinson would be the kind of guy. And when I did my 6 mock drafts, different versions the other day, I had them trading up to 21, but they took their Cooper DeJean, the defensive back from Iowa, who I think is pretty interesting right now. Not only is he a playmaker
defensively. Coming off a torn ACL or Achilles, one of the two, yeah.
He's a guy that's noted as in the return game, which is now more important than it was before. He's a playmaker in secondary, what have you. So, look, you know me. I could come up with 23 theories as to what I think could happen, should happen, what have you. But just trying to focus on the offensive tackle, which is where, you know, we've all been primarily talking about. But again, I guess the thing for me is, at the end of the day, forget any specific player. What's the most valuable asset for Adam Peters right now? I have to think it's the actual draft capital that they have. That, like, this is the thing, you know, that when you have more draft picks than the other guys, not only does it give you just more darts at the board to take picks, but it's now easier to maneuver around the board. I mean, if I was running a team, I would do everything I could to constantly have extra picks. Now, at some point, you have to actually get talent, right? That's why trading down from 2 at some point becomes like, all right, you know, what are we doing here? You got to, like, make a pick. But, that's how I see it. I just think that next year is the year they strike more boldly than they did this year. And having the extra picks then helps you. Now, and again, I think the other thing is, like, look at what they've been doing here as far as these 30 visits. Now, I don't know if we know every single 30 visit, but the ones that I've heard and the ones that have been reported, they didn't bring any tackle in for a 30 who's rated higher than Jordan Morgan, the tackle from Arizona, who some people think is actually a guard. That's the highest rated one they brought in as far as we know. When you look at the edge rushers, they did bring in Chop Robinson, so that's a possibility. But they brought in a lot of day 2 guys who could be there in round 2, round 3. At tackle, you got like a Roger Rosengarten from Washington. At defensive end or edge, you've got Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan. Austin Booker from Kansas. And, you know, there's a variety of reasons why you bring guys in. But Peter's history at San Fran was that – you know, at least half of their classes seem to be guys that they brought in. And again, if you were going to do this, why not bring in Guyton or one of those other guys? I'm sure they spoke with whoever they wanted to along the way, but that's what makes the 30 visits unique. You get the opportunity to spend individual time with them as you choose, and they didn't do that. So maybe it's a smokescreen, but at some point I'm also looking at what they're doing, and they seem to be bringing a lot of day 2 guys more than they were bringing guys up that you would trade for.
Do you have any information on the history of top 30 visits to San Francisco and how many of those players got picked eventually?
Yeah, my colleague Matt Barrows, he's been on my podcast. He was on last week, and we kind of went through a lot of this. And, you know, I think last year there were 5 guys. I don't remember how many picks they had in total, but I think 5 players who they had brought in for 30 visits, and other years it was a good amount of folks as well. You know, we know here last year that Washington, a lot of their draft class was 30 visits, which, you know, again, that's a different kind of a group, but, you know, it's not, I think on the one hand, the 30 visit is an overrated aspect because there's a million reasons why you could meet with somebody. On the other hand, it is also the last chance you have to talk to whoever you want to talk to. So why not bring in people that you are interested in? So yes, I do think that there's a likelihood that, you know, I don't know what it is, half the group or, you know, they would at least try to bring in to draft a bunch of guys who they just met with.
And we have, remember, some of the information about some of these visits was, you know, typical of what we've gotten, which has been very little until it's actually happened. Do we have a full list of their top 30 visits?
I don't believe there is a full list. I mean, they have not been confirming anything, just to be honest.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do my due diligence to get names, and others have reported some things. But no, I don't know if I have a full list or right. a definite or an accurate list completely. But generally, you know, these things, once they get out there, it's, you know, I think if somebody said they were you know, reporting somebody of note coming in and that didn't happen, we would have heard otherwise.
All right. I'm not going to give your entire mock draft, which you've got seven actual selections after the trades, which includes acquiring picks for next year. But after Daniels, who you mocked at two overall, and Roger Rosengarten, the tackle who was one of the guys that blocked for Michael Penix Jr. at Washington. That was an outstanding offensive line, by the way, in college football. You have him going at number 40 overall after trading back with 36. Out of the rest of your five picks that you selected, give me the one that you like the most or that you feel, you know, the best about in terms of what, you know, that you might be right on.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be right on it, but I love the theory. And this is, I have them taking at, I think, pick 100, Zach Zinter, the guard from Michigan, who had a significant leg injury before a few weeks before the national title game. And I get it, like taking guys coming off injury, not great, but here's a guy who had first round projection before the injury, who was, you know, was one of the guys that epitomized what Harbaugh was trying to do up there in Michigan in terms of grit and toughness. And he was a team captain. That's something else that they like. And you know, you're getting him here at a discount, which for a team that is contending, you might be like, well, if this guy isn't going to do much for me this year, if play at all, I don't know Zinter's exact status, then what am I doing? But for a team that is playing the long game, this is perfect. Like, you don't need him this year because, you know, you can let him take his time and you might be getting a player who would be otherwise, you know, without the injury, you wouldn't be able to get him. So that to me is the type of thing I think is interesting. And look, I do my best to not input my own biases into these mocks, but since we're not getting much information out of them, I'm having to do that somewhat. But to this point, they have gone along with how I saw free agency and, you know, in terms of not spending big on individuals and rather going the volume approach. So I'm going to sort of just stick to my guns on that point and say, whether it's Zinter or not, that they're just in general focusing more on next year than they are somebody that has to come in and play. Again, that's why they went out and did what they did in free agency. They went out and signed Nick Allegretti to play left guard if needed. They signed all these defensive ends.
Right.
The
free agency gave you the indication that they're thinking long term much more than they're thinking about 2024. I would also point out, and I put this out earlier because I read a couple of things about this weekend, is that there are a lot of people that believe that there are a significant number of players that are going back to college for the COVID year and the NIL money, and that the third day of this draft, specifically rounds 4 through 7, are not going to be on paper as strong as previous drafts, but next year's might be. So that's another reason why you might be right with respect to Adam Peters using draft capital to acquire future draft capital.
Yeah, I thought I saw the other day in my haze of covering his team, I thought I saw the other day that Giants GM Joe Shane, when he had his pre-draft press conference, said there was like over 100 players that the Giants had graded as, you know, viable picks that stayed in school. So, yeah. And I saw
somebody say between 75 and 150 draftable players going back to school. Now, that's a lot, but still.
Right. And I remember back at the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, who's a former scout and a guy, you know, the guy that's exactly.
Yeah, I read that one too.
He said this would be a weak draft. Right, if I got a day 3 pick, I'm doing whatever I can to get out of that. Like, if I have to trade 3 of them to move up for a 4th or whatever, like, I'm doing that because day 3 is not going to be good. So I kind of buy that. And by the way, like, even beyond just like the later round, like, as I'm doing my mock draft, if I want to shove in 12 wide receivers, I can probably do that. But I most years I feel, and this is not scouting, this is just my playing the game. Most years I'm like, oh man, I have like 40 players. I'm trying to squeeze into 32 picks. And now this year, I'm more like, What am I doing with these last couple of spots? Am I just putting in receivers over and over again? I don't know. So I do think there's a bit of a thinness to this group this year, which is, again, another reason to play for next year.
All right, great job. We will get more from you before Thursday. I'm sure we'll talk about having you on certainly Wednesday and maybe the draft day as well. And you don't have to submit your formal – you've told me before, it's the night before, right? Your formal first-round mock draft for the, you know, for the competition.
Correct. The Athletic is keeping me busy with all the things that they want from us. So I honestly have not even, like, semi-formalized my thoughts on the final. But, yes, I got till Wednesday night. It's a pencils-down situation at that point. So right. I'll be ready by then.
We'll talk to you before the draft. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Ben Standing, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.